continue on the topic that we have been reading from. We spoke a little bit on Sunday, and I did say that I would continue this evening on this topic, so therefore that is why I'm doing so. And for those who are not here on Sunday, I apologize, but I'm not going to go back and to fully summarize that everything we spoke about then, although I can give a very extremely brief summary, which will help us at least to understand where we're going from here on this topic. We are reading from Sri Bhakti Loka, which are a series of essays on activities which are favorable for devotional service given by Rupa Goswami, and the six activities which are unfavorable. And this essay that we are reading from is on the topic of patience. And we already explained that patience is extremely necessary for those who are practitioners, not only of bhakti yoga, but of even those who are jnanis or those who are karmis, those who want fruitive result, those who want liberation, and those who aspire for devotion, which evokes Krishna's pleasure, which is the bhakta. And therefore, because this essay is on specifically on the bhakta, who is engaged in sadhana, who is known as a sadhaka, and these sadhana, as we explained, is the work that he does on himself by connecting his activities with Krishna and trying to control the six urges of the body, which were the urge to speak, the urge of the mind's demands, the urge of the actions of anger, the tongue and the belly and the genitals. So it is stated that when a person who has full control of these six urges, then having first conquered himself and controlling these urges, then he is capable of controlling the world. And we already explained what controlling the world means. It means that the world cannot control him, in the sense that because he has full control of these urges, he cannot be allured into or persuaded or manipulated to do anything which is born of the desire to fulfill these urges. And therefore, this material world can offer, as we said, many allurements and attractions in order to capture one who is insufficiently controlled. And therefore, by so doing, he becomes controlled by others and becomes controlled by this world. Whereas the person who can fully control these urges, then it is stated that such a person achieves self-control, and the result is his mind becomes peaceful. He's able to fix his mind on Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased by his efforts to control these urges, he bestows upon him the greatest benediction, not only self-satisfaction, which is achievable by devotional service, but he gives him the supreme happiness, which is that which is pure unalloyed devotional service, not only as a temporary relief, which is what most people, and we'll speak about that tonight, most people think that happiness is the relief of distress or to be liberated from all distresses. But devotional service takes us beyond that stage of the happiness derived from relief from distress and actually situates one in transcendental happiness. So we spoke about the urge to speak, and tonight we're going to begin speaking about the urge of the mind, and that is our brief summary leading up to this topic for tonight. It is the duty of a sober person to tolerate the urge of the mind. Until one is habituated To control the urge of the mind, how can one perform devotional service with attention? A materialist sits in the chariot of the mind and never gets relief from its various urges except during sleep. Even during sleep, many thoughts such as good and bad dreams come. In order to regulate the urges of the mind, rishis have propounded Ashtanga Yoga and Raja Yoga, but the Lord's prescription is that one should regulate the mind from the inferior tastes by giving it a higher taste. Those who are on the path of devotional service can easily regulate the mind. The mind cannot remain without urges. If urged towards spiritual subjects, the mind is properly engaged and it will not hanker for insignificant subjects. Many people think that without Ashtanga Yoga, there is no alternative to regulate the mind. But Patanjali Muni has accepted that just as Ashtanga Yoga regulates the mind, Bhakti Yoga can also. Meditation on the Supreme Lord, as propounded by Patanjali, is not pure devotional service. Rather, it is Sakama Bhakti, or motivated. If devotional service is performed for the purpose of regulating the mind, then it is certainly not devoid of material desires. Favorable cultivation of devotional service in relationship to Krishna is the real meaning of pure bhakti. Therefore, whenever pure devotional service is performed, joyfulness of the mind automatically arises from amongst extraneous fruits. Srimad Bhagavatam states, Tasmat kenapyupayena manak Krishna naveshayat. Somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. If one follows this instruction, then the mind will be engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, and it will not easily wander into other subjects. For the practitioner, the urge of the mind is regulated by pure cultivation of favorable devotional service in relationship to Krishna. By carefully meditating on this subject, one can know the inherent differences between yoga and bhakti. So, there's a lot there. I'll try to summarize a few of the important points in this particular section about controlling the urge of the mind. First, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that without controlling the mind, it is very difficult to perform devotional service with attention. Krishna explains this also in the Bhagavad Gita, that for one who has controlled his mind, it's his best friend, but one who fails to control, it is his worst enemy. And he also says that for one who conquers the mind, super soul is reached and he attains tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor are all the same. So Krishna, throughout Bhagavad Gita, in many places, he emphasizes the need to control the mind. And as we explained in the topic of the urge to speak, we also said, yes, generally we think that the best way to control this urge is to only speak about Krishna or to only eat prasadam, a food offered to Krishna. And here, as we see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is also explaining, yes, that the best way to engage the mind is to always think of Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yajimam namaskaru. As Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, always think of me, worship me, offer your homages to me, and surely you will come to me. So, in the same vein that we spoke about on the topic of the urge to speak, we also have to understand that just as it is very difficult to always speak about Krishna, and we gave various examples, it is also very difficult to always fix the mind on Krishna, because as Arjuna says to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, it is very difficult to control the mind. It's like trying to control the raging wind. So, therefore, the devotee needs help in controlling the mind. If he tries to control it by his own efforts, as we said, it is extremely difficult to do so, although certainly the tendency to let the mind go unrestrained has to be restricted if one wants any sense of peace, as we quoted that verse also the other night. For one who is not connected with the Supreme, he can have neither a controlled mind nor a steady intelligence without any possibility of there being peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So, very simple statement by Krishna that if the mind is not connected to the Supreme, then there's no question of having a controlled mind. It simply wanders from here and there. And as we explained, I don't think it was here, maybe it was someplace else, we explained that the yoga system, specifically Patanjali yoga system, but other yoga systems, they also give various prescriptions on how to control the mind at various stages. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that simply to control the mind, which is, if anybody who knows anything about yoga and aspires to become peaceful, they know that yoga, control of the mind, is necessary. But simply to control the mind is not the actual goal of the bhakta. Most people want to control the mind because they want peace. And therefore, they adopt various measures in order to try to curb the mind, which is always looking for objects to strike, the raging mind, and is implicating us in a network of frustrations and lack of complete fulfillment of the mind's desires. And having experienced this perpetually, maybe since time immemorial, but maybe only in this life, or maybe only in recent times, one at least who understands the necessity to control the mind, he does so because he's aspiring to obtain some peace of mind. And nobody can argue that peace of mind is something that's valuable. It has its virtues. It has its benefits. And it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is there's no peace of mind. Men are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. Short-lived also. So that is the statement in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And we, as we know, Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel. Why is it the age of quarrel? Because people's minds are so disturbed that by slight provocation there's friction. And so many symptoms, which are quite obvious, that people are looking for solutions and looking for how to achieve peace, both individually and especially collectively. What is that verse? Bhoktaram jagatapasam savaloka maheshwaram suridam savabhutanam yatvamham shantam vichyati. With one, Prabhupada used to explain that this is the peace formula, that those who know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord of all the planets of the demigods, the Lord of all sacrifices and austerities, and who is the best friend and well-wisher of all living beings, such persons who know this, they attain peace from the pangs of material existence. And Prabhupada would say, this is our peace formula. Although many people are looking for diplomacy and negotiations and various types of methods to achieve peace on a political platform, and sometimes even on an individual platform, it's generally found that it's not very successful because Kali Yuga is the symptom of constant disturbance, and a slight provocation creates friction again. So simply to strive for peace, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, and I'll quote that section, he says, meditation on the Supreme Lord as propounded by Patanjali is not pure devotional service, rather it is sakama bhakti, or motivated. Devotional service is performed for the purpose of regulating the mind then it is certainly not devoid of material desires. And as long as there's any material desires, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakaldi Ashanta. As Chaitanya Charitamrita states, that those who are bhuktis, those who are looking for enjoyment in this world, those who are muktis, who want liberation from this material world, from suffering, those who are siddhis, those who are looking for mystic yogic perfections, because there's still some desires, sakali ashanta. Therefore, they can't be fully peaceful. Therefore, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama, a devotee of Lord Krishna, is desireless. So this is an important point to understand when discussing this topic about controlling of the mind, is what does it mean to be desireless? Because most people think desireless means without desires. It's obvious. Desireless, without desires. But actually, the living being can never be free from desire, because desire is described as the eternal companion of the soul. And therefore, the very symptom of life is desire. Every one of us has it. We all have some desires. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, he says, the mind cannot remain without urges. So here we're talking about how to control the urges of the mind, but now the mind cannot remain without urges. So how to deal with that? If the mind cannot remain without urges, it seems like a contradiction. It's impossible for the mind to remain without urges, but at the same time, we have to control the urges of the mind. So, therefore, he makes the point clear. The mind cannot remain without urges, but if urged towards spiritual subjects, the mind is properly engaged, and it will not hanker for insignificant subjects. Therefore, rather than controlling the urges of the mind, restricting the mind from disturbing elements, which can bring about some platform of, or aspire to bring about some platform of peace, a devotee is one who engages the mind positively in the activities of service to Krishna. He thinks of Krishna favorably. Anya balasata sunyam ganaka manya avatam anukulina krishnanu shivanam bhaktir uttama. That first-class devotional service develops, then it must be devoid of all material desires, it must be devoid of knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and it must be devoid of fruitive action. The devotee renders service to Krishna as favorably as Krishna desires. So, favorably means when the mind accepts the urges and the mind is directed towards satisfying the desires of the Lord. In other words, one has to develop the urge to please the Lord. Shrinvata svatkata krishna punya shavani kirtana hidantisto hyavadani virunati srihitsutam. Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul in the heart of every living being, he cleanses the desire for material enjoyment in the heart of that person who develops the urge to hear his messages. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, no, it doesn't mean to completely cancel all urges. It means to cultivate spiritual urges, develop the urge to hear about Krishna. It is also stated, Shishusho Shrana Dhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi, Sian Mahat Sevayavi Praponya Tirtha Nishevana. By serving devotees who are freed from vice, great service is done. By that service, one develops the urge to hear and chant about Krishna. So urges cannot be canceled. Urges, one actually has to learn how to cultivate the urge to render service to Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. And the result is, not only does the devotee become peaceful, but actually, the devotee begins to experience a higher pleasure, a greater pleasure than just peace. Peace is still, as we said, the desire for peace is still, or I didn't say, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, the desire for peace is still, some impure motivations is there, the desire for peace. It's helpful. We should aspire for it. But why? Because when the mind is peaceful, then it's easier to fix the mind on Krishna. That's why we want to become peaceful. Most people want to become peaceful so that they can enjoy peace. It's certainly, there's some enjoyment, there's some pleasure in peace. Relief from suffering is definitely enjoyable. But there's more to life than relief. And spiritual life means to know what is beyond relief. Not only what is beyond relief, but spiritual life automatically includes relief with experiencing the higher taste. It includes, it's sava parivinir muktam tatparat vena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. Rupa Goswami has written that when one engages the mind and the senses in Krishna's service, then the result is by rendering service to who? To Hrishikesh, the master of the senses. Because Krishna is the master of the senses. What happens? Sava parivinir muktam. One becomes freed from all material designations, and one's senses become controlled. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would oftentimes quote the verse by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, who says that for a devotee who has achieved the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, who's got that mercy, then the venomous serpent of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. They no longer have any poisonous effect. Just like a serpent is always looking for an object to strike, but when the fang is broken, it can't do anything. So when one has actually gotten some mercy from Lord Chaitanya, one actually experiences a higher pleasure. The senses are not, nullified, but the senses are meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada actually says that sense gratification is like salt. Every good cook knows they have to put a little salt in the preparation to bring out all the flavor of the spices. But too much salt spoils the whole prep. So everyone needs to gratify their senses. Why? Because we're sentient beings. In the same way, we need to gratify the urges of the mind. Why? Because mind is, and desires are a symptom of life, as we said. So, therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that more than just simply controlling the urges of the mind, the bhakta is one who always looks for opportunities to engage the mind favorably in Krishna's service. Prabhupada gives one example in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When he talks about controlling the mind and the senses, is like a person who enters the river, a strong current of the river, and tries to control the waves of the river by his own strength. Now, we can easily identify with that. I mean, obviously, you try to go in and control the waves of the river by your own strength, you're not going to be very successful. And we can also see what happens when the waves of the river, like flash floods, tsunamis, when they come, nobody's going to say stop. It just doesn't work that way. Captures everything within its tracks, you know, and just sweeps it away. But Prabhupada gives the example. He says that, but the waves of the river enter into the ocean. And when the waves of the river enter into the ocean, then the power of the ocean can push back the influence of the waves. So in the same way, he says, a devotee, he must fill his mind favorably with thoughts of service to Krishna. And when the mind is favorably filled with thoughts of service of Krishna, then the ocean of Krishna consciousness, the unlimited ocean, By our own efforts, we can't do it. We control the minds? Can't, it's possible. Control the senses? It's not. But Krishna, who is Hrishikesh, who's the master of the senses, when Krishna, who is Hrishikesh, the master of the senses, when he actually gives one a superior pleasure, because he's also the reservoir of pleasure, any pleasure that one experiences on the spiritual platform is coming from him. He gives. He's Govinda. He's one who gives pleasure to the senses. So when the senses experience pleasure that's coming from Krishna, it's so overwhelming that the thought of sense gratification is not only insignificant, but non-existent. Such is the power of devotional service. It just doesn't exist. Now, how to get caught in that, in the waves of the ocean? There's another verse in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which helps us to understand this principle. And in, it's Narada Muni speaking to one king, Prachini Baharshat. And he says to the king, he says that in that place where pure devotees meet, following the rules and regulations, in that place where pure devotees are always engaged in discussing the topics of the Supreme Lord, if one enters into that place and gets caught up in those topics, just like the waves of a river. Narada Muni uses the example, like the surging of a river. You get caught in those waves, then what happens? He says, the one will forget about all the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, and one will become free from all kinds of illusion, lamentation, and fear. So in other words, the flowing of the river is the flowing of the topics of the Supreme Lord that is engaged in those places where devotees are always sitting and discussing such topics. And we see examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam, such as Narada Muni. Narada Muni, 5-year-old boy, he happened to be sitting and hearing the topics of Bhaktivedantas, who are always engaged in transcendental topics, subject matters in connection with the Lord. He got caught in that place, caught in the waves, rendered service to them, took the remnants of food from them, became the great Vaishnava, Narada Muni, as a result. Example is given of Maharaj Bharata, who took birth as a deer in his next life because of attachment to deer. But in this birth of deer, he remembered how he actually, how he had taken that body. So even though he's in a deer's body, because of the super soul within the heart, he remembered how he got there. And he went to Pulak Ashram, where great sages were sitting and discussing topics of the Lord. And he would stand in the body of the deer, and he would listen to their topics, flowing like the waves of the river. Flowing like the waves of the river. And in his next life, he took birth as a great devotee, Jad Bharata. So, many other examples we can think of. But the point is that the desires cannot be stopped by our own efforts. We need to get caught up in the bigger wave. That's not our capacity. It's like just like the example of like trying to put a forest fire out. Sometimes it's very difficult. But when there's a greater capacity, when the clouds carrying the water from the ocean inundate on the fire, then it puts out the forest fire of material enjoyment. So, although we may try to throw buckets on the fire, but when the bigger picture comes in, beyond our own capacity, comes in, and the whole ocean is emptied out in the form of cloudbursts of rain, then the fire of material enjoyment is put out. So how to get caught in this ocean, how to get caught in this constant flow so that we can get the help that we need to control the urges of the mind, which are impossible by our own effort. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining here that is achieved by somehow or other doing what is necessary to fix the mind on Krishna. And in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna the topmost point, principle, is to always fix your mind upon me without deviation. That's it. Fix your mind upon me. But because Krishna also knows that sometimes we need concessions. In the next verse, he says, "Ata chitang samadhatam nashaknosi mahistiram abhyasa yogena tato mami chaptam dananjaya." My dear Arjuna, if you can't fix your mind on me always without deviation, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, you'll develop the desire to attain me. And this is a very important point for us, for sadhakas. This is what this discussion is about. Sadhakas are persons who are actually can't come immediately to the platform of always thinking of Krishna, but they have to do something, make some endeavor, and remain patient. What do they have to remain patient? We read that the other night. They have to remain patient in performing their sadhana. Krishna says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, being impatient to prolong sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Therefore, a practicing devotee who desires to achieve his goal attains the result only when he becomes patient. Patient, not just as we said the other night, just not just patient means just sitting and waiting for it to come, not making any effort in ourselves. No, that's foolishness. But patient means making some endeavor. So Krishna says, if you can't think of me always, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. What is the following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga? Sometimes we clarify this point. We have to, because many people, when they hear regulative principles, immediately they think, no meat, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication, because these are the regulative principles that devotees, so-called regulative principles. But Krishna's not telling Arjuna to do these things. He's not saying, Arjuna, don't eat meat, don't take intoxication. No, these are the regulative principles of human life, to do these things. He's telling, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. The regular principles of bhakti yoga means to regulate the mind. To regulate the mind to every day do something to remember Krishna. Satatam, no, smartavyam satatam Vishnu, vismartavyo najatu chit, savaviri nisedasyo etyo eva kankara. Krishna must always be remembered. He must never be forgotten. All the rules and prohibitions given in the scriptures are meant to serve these two principles. So it is explained by our commentators on this verse that the word satatam generally means always. But in this particular verse, and we have to stop in just a minute because part of our sadhana is to worship Radha Gopi Vallabha. Yeah, but we should. Artik, this is part of... But just let me finish this point, and then we'll have Artik.
Then we can do our course.
Huh?
After the Artik, we can...
Well, I think after Artik, we have to serve prasadam. So we'll let... that is also...
Maybe everybody may like the class.
That is also controlling the senses. It's taking Krishna prasadam. We can't deprive people of their sense control. So, smartavyam satatam Vishnur. Satatam generally means always. But in this particular verse, smartavyam satatam Vishnur, vismartavyo najatu chit, sava vidhi nisedasyo etiyo eva kinkara. Krishna must always be remembered and he must never be forgotten. All the rules, the positive activities that help us to remember Krishna, and all the prohibitions, the activities we should avoid, which are disturbances to remember Krishna, they are meant to serve these two principles. So the point is, for a person who is always remembering Krishna, he doesn't have to think about what to avoid. It's irrelevant. Why do I have to think about what to avoid if my mind is always fixed on Krishna? It's redundant. Unnecessary. So, but yet this verse says you have to, certain things you have to avoid. So obviously this verse is applying to a person who can't always think of Krishna. Although one should always think of Krishna, it applies to persons who can't always think of Krishna. So therefore, what does satatam mean in this verse? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this verse, satatam means every day. Every day. That is what it means. That is regulative principles of bhakti yoga. We regulate our mind by every day, somehow or other, doing something that fixes our mind on Krishna. If we don't, we won't get help. We won't get caught up in any river, tsunamis, places. We won't become free from illusion, lamentation, and fear. We won't, you know, forget about all the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, which Narada Muni says will happen if you get caught in that wave, in the flowing river. So regulate means to go to that place where devotees are chanting Krishna's glories. And here, that is regulate. Yes, I should go to some place where they're chanting Krishna's glories. And if I can't go to some place where they're chanting Krishna's glories, I should hear Krishna's glories by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. I should chant Krishna's name. And I should pray to Krishna, please, you give me the strength to control my raging mind, because if I try to do it myself, I'm lost. And that is sadaka. A sadaka is one who has an urge. He has an urge. He's not desireless. He has an urge to come closer to Krishna. That is his urge. And when that urge is awakened by association of devotees, when that urge is awakened, then what happens is that one can continue along the path. Just like Bhagavatam says, the value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared to heavenly planets, to worldly prosperity, or ultimately meant for those who are worldly prosperity, which is ultimately meant for those who are death. And there's another important verse. It says, what is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better one moment of full consciousness. Because if one gets one moment of full consciousness, that will awaken the urge. The urge to achieve that goal. One moment of full consciousness. And therefore Bhagavatam says, one moment is much more valuable than living hundreds of years. Everybody wants to live for a very long lifetime. They think, yes, if I have a long life, that's valuable. But Bhagavatam has a different value system. Bhagavatam says, if you have one moment of full consciousness, that's far more valuable than your hundreds of years lifetime, which is wasted without any experience of awakening that urge. So better one moment of full consciousness. And when that one moment of full consciousness is glimpse, that slight ray of something higher that is beyond this world, which is connected to Krishna, when that's awakened, then what happens? The urge is awakened. And that urge has to be continuously fanned. So the way to continuously fan that urge is by regulating the mind and the senses in bhakti yoga by every day, somehow or other, fixing the mind on Krishna. And in this way, this is the way to control the urges of the mind by giving it a superior urge. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's recommendation here. We didn't completely cover the topic, but as we said, we want to continue with Artik, and thank you for your attention. Hare Krishna.